All right, everybody, it is time for another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. But before we dive in to our awesome, awesome guest and conversation today, I want to remind you guys of two things. And the first one is that if you go to crypto101insider.com, you can join our private community. Here's where we have our model portfolio and all of our top picks. We also have Crypto 101 University, where we have hours and hours and hours of written and video content that explains blockchain and explains cryptocurrency in a very bite-sized and easy to understand way. And we have a weekly newsletter that goes out and quarterly state of crypto addresses that go out. There is just a ton of value packed into this every which way. So I want you guys first to go to crypto101insider.com today, if you haven't already. I also want to remind you guys that Pizza Mind and I recently just finished a book. It took 11 months of our lives to write, and we're calling it Crypto Revolution, Your Guide to the Future of Money. We walk you through this fascinating world of cryptocurrencies and blockchain, and it's part history book, it's part instructional guide, and it's going to really show you guys why cryptocurrencies are globally disruptive and how they're going to actually change in real life and in real terms the way that we buy and sell and even live. We include a bunch of how-tos on getting started with your first exchanges. We give you tips on how to safely buy and sell and store cryptocurrencies, as well as how do we evaluate potentially good cryptocurrencies. And the best part of the book is that we're giving it away for free. All you have to do is pay for shipping and handling. So go to cryptorevolution.com and pick up your copy today.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to another great episode here at the Crypto 101 podcast. Pizza Mind here, and I'm joined today by Danny Chong, the co-founder of Tranches. Danny, welcome. How you doing?
Good. Thanks very much for having me on the Crypto 101. You know, like love speaking to everyone today. I've been keeping tabs on the kind of like the things that you have been saying all along, and very interested to be speaking to the audience today.
I really appreciate that, and this is not your first time with us. We had you on the Digital Currency Summit, and we were very impressed by your depth of knowledge and experience. We wanted to bring you back on the podcast to learn some more from you. But first, let's talk about you for a little bit. Where are you calling in from today?
I'm calling in today from Singapore. Just sharing also earlier, like normally this is the time when I'll be sending kids to school, but here we are just to speak to Crypto 101.
And it's amazing that we can have this conversation. It's about dinner time for me here in Texas, just early morning for you, and we get to meet and exchange ideas literally any time of the day. What a time to be alive in the world. We really take it for granted now that we have things like Zoom and international calling and streaming in real time 9,000 miles away, but it really is a marvel to be appreciated.
Indeed. You know, I can't imagine life for the past couple of months or years, without digital communication.
Absolutely. So, Danny, give us a brief background of your education and your experience in finance.
Well, sure. So basically, I'm an engineer by training, have been for the past 16 over years being in investment banks, the likes of BNP Paribas, SocGen, and I've been working across different countries, Singapore, Hong Kong, running roles such as taking charge of trading, sales, structuring for Asia Pacific. So in terms of traditional finance, definitely quite long history, relatively long compared to crypto. But here I am, after doing my rounds in crypto, understanding the, doing my rounds in traditional finance, understanding what's been going on, trying to bring the experience and also the know-how together with my team into DeFi and see how we can actually contribute in an improvement and continual upgrade of what we know as DeFi today.
So, where is DeFi at in terms of maturity? You know, if you want to get an education in traditional finance, you go to school, you read some books, you watch some videos. If you want to learn about DeFi, there's no blueprint. It's still being built day by day. How do you look at DeFi from your lenses and apply it to what you want to do?
Well, I guess, you know, like I speak on behalf of many friends and families out there. You know, like crypto itself is also relatively new. And to talk about DeFi, which I always see as a one layer deeper than crypto, you probably want to see it as a second step or the next step from just knowing what coin there are, like Bitcoin or Ethereum. So that's the exciting part about crypto or DeFi as well in general, that there is no fixed form of learning. And I can see that a lot of DeFi protocols coming out with proper white paper and, you know, like a well-written document that for the more keen or, you know, like a sophisticated type of users, they can actually go in and find out a lot more in-depth about details. But since there are too many protocols and it may be a bit deep for people to read out about them, there's always YouTube videos. I find that really very useful. I mean, here we are talking at crypto on Crypto 101, right? So I really do suggest that for new entrants into the DeFi space, there are really a lot of resources online, be it on print or be it on YouTube videos. Really just go and sift it out and have a look through before you embark on your next steps. There's no rush. There's really no rush to try and immediately jump on the bandwagon to try and buy something or engage on using a protocol. Step by step, I think you should try to find out more what you are going into. Do your own research before you go into the world of DeFi. It's easy. There are some jargons that you probably want to understand, but after that, you know, like it's going to be a smooth process.
Very good advice. No rush. By the time you learn something, there's going to be 20 more things to learn. So just take it all in stride.
It's all relative.
Very fast moving space. I wanted to ask you, you've got a very extensive background on the trading desk for Forex. Well, how does the crypto trading and the markets move in crypto move in relation to Forex? Was it a very simple, seamless transition from one to the other, or do things move differently over here?
Well, the thing is, they are not that different. If we have to look at it, you can compare it as like a gold versus dollar. That's always a favorite pair in commodities or FX. That can be a euro versus dollar. And in the world of crypto, I think everyone's familiar with BTC against dollar. So from the likes of it, trading FX will not be that different as compared to trading crypto. Well, the thing is, you have to know Forex is a lot less volatile as compared to crypto. So a lot of people who first embark or change from the trading of Forex into crypto, they are suddenly astounded or a bit trying to adjust towards the volatility in crypto. I mean, Forex is also definitely something that's thicker in liquidity, and it only works on 5 days basis. Crypto works on a 24/7. So I actually heard of friends who started trading crypto, and they were like, "What? It also moves on weekend. I can't get my rest." So that is you have to adopt a more different style when you are especially trying to adapt to crypto trading. I do also want to encourage people not just to purely look at it as FX or Forex. You should also look at it as a combination to how an equity is like. Because although it looks very similar to Forex, but there are some bases of actually you are also buying into certain technologies or blockchain development or into the growth of the token itself. So with that, you should also not just purely look at it on trading as a foreign exchange pair.
That makes sense. One thing that I've been wondering for a while, and we've been throwing around some ideas, is why does it seem like everything in crypto moves in lockstep with Bitcoin? Regardless of whether news is good or bad, if Bitcoin goes down, it seems to drag everything else with it. Do you have any theories why that might be?
Well, everything is connected in tandem. So even if we looked at it from previously, FX. If euro dollar or dollar yen moves, the rest of the regional currencies, dollar sing, even the pound, even the Aussie dollar, they will be moving in tandem. Ultimately, everything it's moving based on a risk on or risk off kind of a sentiment. Bitcoin being kind of the leader and the biggest market cap token in the world of crypto will surely have an impact as a leading token for the rest of crypto. If it moves up, definitely the rest of the crypto will want to move up in tandem. If it moves down, it definitely will move down. It's just like maybe if New York Stock Exchange moves up, you know, the rest of the world's exchanges may also move up in tandem because it's all following on, as I mentioned, a risk on sentiment. Now, obviously, the thing to note is that because Bitcoin is bigger in market cap size, the moves may be now a bit more stable and less volatile. But if you are looking at the smaller tokens or the above top 20 ranking type of token, you might want to be careful because lesser liquidity and lesser players on those tokens will mean that the moves will be a lot more volatile and they can be moving bigger in percentage points.
That's very good advice. Tell me, what's the sentiment from traditional finance like in regards to crypto and digital assets now? I remember when I first got into the space in 2017, basically any conversation you had about Bitcoin, you were looked at like a scammer or like you're just crazy. And then, you know, 2020 yeah. came around and it really kind of opened up a lot of people's eyes for the need of a decentralized currency and the value of going digital for a lot of things.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, like what you've experienced is something that I've gone through as well. I'll be very honest, very, very earlier on when Bitcoin first came out, I was also a bit skeptical. It was also after I started looking deeper and analyzing a bit more stuff that I find that, okay, this is the future. You know, like this could be something that I'll be keen to do myself. The current sentiment has already much changed from even a year or 2 years ago. Well, let's look at it from as early as 2021. Before that, you have not heard of any TradFi coming into crypto. But since last year, the likes of private banks, be it from JP Morgan or Citi, they started having desks that caters to specifically looking at crypto for clients. So clients will be able to access crypto via the desk and so on. And, you know, like previously traditional institutions, the likes of BlackRock, even the traditional bank types like Wells Fargo or State Street. You know, like these are the last people that I will be imagining them coming into crypto. But well, they have announced that they're already coming into crypto pretty fast on. They have already invested, they have also allocated a certain portion into crypto. They are also providing accesses into crypto for clients. I'd like to come back to also, you know, like just have a imagination on what kind of a magnitude these people or these institutions coming in could bring on to the world of crypto. Let's just look at BlackRock. BlackRock is an asset manager that's the size of $10 trillion, and that's one asset manager. The size of wow. crypto today is $2 trillion. Imagine that the world of asset managers starts coming in and allocates a couple of percent into crypto, into DeFi. Where is that going to take us? That's one part of the institution that you want to take note of. Now look at, for example, in Ontario, KPMG, one of the top four accounting firms. They have already started allocating 1% of their balance sheet into crypto. They are very big as well. And if you look at the number of corporates in the world and every corporate out there just allocating 1%, what's that going to bring in terms of the market for the world of crypto or the world of DeFi? Imagine that. So I think we are in very exciting times in which different institutions are coming at different I think time that's comfortable for their own setup, for their own research, to dabble into crypto. there will be a lot of amazing things that we can look forward to. I mean, New York Stock Exchange, wow. They have already said that they are going to be having their own token. They're going to be having their own NFT exchange and crypto exchange as well. There will be a lot of convergence, I feel, incoming this year between traditional finance and DeFi. So back to your question of like how the world of TradFi is viewing DeFi, I would say they are very excited. They're very curious. And they are taking pragmatic steps coming into the world of crypto and DeFi and making it better.
It took a lot just for traditional finance and regulators to be comfortable with Bitcoin from a standpoint of how the markets moved, whether or not volume was manipulated or real, how to custody the thing in a safe manner. And now you've got DeFi, which is very interesting, but it proposes a whole new set of challenges, both technologically, legally, and many other things. What needs to happen in order for traditional finance to get their hands on some of these blue chip DeFi tokens?
Well, there's quite a few steps that would be needed. Let me think about that on what's the best way to reply to you. I think it's a step-by-step process. I wouldn't think that TradFi entrance into DeFi would be able to skip the step of not knowing first crypto, mainstream crypto, the likes of BTC and ETH. I think first of all, they would have to be familiar with the top 10 crypto tokens out there as a first step, you know, like be comfortable with trading them before they can actually move on to DeFi. Now, we all know that DeFi, even for myself, when I first started, even for people that I've already helped along the way set up MetaMask, setting the correct blockchain network and gaining access to protocol, it takes a bit of time. And in fact, the whole logic of things sometimes just makes it a bit more difficult to understand for the TradFi types or even, let's just say, my uncle. You know, like they would definitely need some time to understand the process. So for them to go into DeFi, there are also other steps that we need to look at. First of all, the transparency of DeFi protocols, the security of the DeFi protocols. And last of all, I think whether regulators allow traditional types or institutions to be able to directly investing into DeFi. So maybe I can say that for this to come about, there could be a need for intermediary that is regulated by, you know, like different countries, regulators. And given being the center point in which, be it your asset manager or be, you know, like just banks where you can actually put money into the intermediary that will help you deploy your assets out. Why? Because they are regulated, so the money they can help you access into DeFi. They do not have to be seen as putting money elsewhere into a MetaMask and investing into an asset type that may be not recognized by their own compliance or governance or risk management. So the intermediary will be an important step currently for them to be able to go into it. I mean, ultimately, if the regulatory controls improve, or there are more transparencies or acceptance by the compliance and risk management part of the business, then there can be a direct access. But I think for now, the intermediaries is a quick solution for the world of TradFi to gain entrance into DeFi. Even as I speak today, although I feel that this is the next step, I have already reached out by asset managers from the likes of Switzerland, from other parts of the world who have told me that you know, they are already going by themselves, investing kind of like a client's money into DeFi directly. But those are a bit of the smaller percentages now. There also is probably a need for more TradFi people to enter into the world of crypto or DeFi themselves to help gain confidence into the world of DeFi. I also find that some of the DeFi protocols may not be as transparent. And I guess to the extent regulators can't accept it, and to a lot of people, if they can't see who's behind, they may not trust it as much. So the future of DeFi could also evolve with more transparency and possibly more revealing of who's on the protocol to gain confidence and credibility.
Interesting, interesting. And there's a lot to do in DeFi, whether it's lending pools for Uniswap or a bunch of stablecoin pools on Curve. What are some of the strategies that you're hearing are attractive to all these big money asset managers? Like, are they just going to be holding a bunch of governance tokens like Maker and Compound, or are they going to be providing liquidity and just earning interest off of lending or borrowing?
Oh, definitely. That's a good question. For a lot of the institutions coming in, I think they may not necessarily go into the likes of Ethereum, BNB, or Bitcoin. They would start with changing and converting into a virtual dollar. So that could be your USDC, USDT, and so on. Why? Because they understand that, first of all, on the benchmark, dollar one is versus dollar one. But they are getting much more yield in return for just holding on to dollar. So with that understanding, they can allocate some of their balance sheet or some of their assets into so-called something similar to dollars. I mean, it's if you look at it on another perspective, it's them putting it into a fixed deposit or buying a bond that gives them a good return per annum basis. Now, so from my conversations with the various people, I mean, definitely there will be the types that's looking to go into BTC and so on. But I think a lot more will be comfortable with just starting on stable coins and earning attractive yield. So any of the big protocols or any of the names that kind of like will be providing liquidity and for them to easily post USDC will be great. Though, of course, I see that they need some help in doing on-ramp and off-ramp conversion. But of course, that is another story. So definitely for them at this juncture, you'll be looking at the big names, maybe Compound, Curve, and so on and so forth. But I believe that there will also be the top few protocol that's within each blockchain that should be sufficing in terms of ranking for them to basically look into.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And I was thinking while listening to you talk right there, you know, I've got kind of a complicated question, but it's one that we're all living in at the time being right now when we're recording this. And we're seeing asset prices for everything just increasing. And whether it's assets, commodities, you know, if we're trying to buy a house, things are going, you know, $100,000 above asking price in some cases. Rent skyrocketing, gas is skyrocketing, food is skyrocketing. Everything's going up. Yet stocks are coming down, crypto's coming down. Governments all over the world are still trying to print even more money than they already did a couple years ago. If we're, you know, Bitcoin was really the narrative against inflation. That's why it was invented, to protect against inflation, the devaluation of the dollar, so people can have purchasing power that grows over time instead of depreciates. But the dollar is still stronger than ever right now on the world markets. Why is that?
Wow, that's a big question to...
It's a big question. I don't know if there's a right answer, but you know, it's just something that we've really looked at, you know, when, you know, 20% of the entire dollar supply that's ever been created was created in 1 year, you'd think that's going to, you know, really drive it down. But the opposite's kind of happened.
I think there's a few things we need to keep in mind. First of all, let's look at what the world is looking at currently. There's an ongoing war that makes certain part of economical development a bit gray. You're not sure whether this will be long lasting. You're not sure also of like what are the impacts. And people are taking different mindsets or preparations for the eventual ending or not ending of the war. There is also COVID. COVID is actually kind of like a wild card that's happening. I mean, with a lot of people assuming that this is going to be a thing of the past soon, and everything's going to be going back to everything is awesome. But that kind of like, is still not a sentiment that's shared across the world. I mean, even now, as we can see, the likes of China, the likes of, Taiwan, they are having a very tough time, in terms of like, COVID numbers. So whereas one part of the world is seeing that, you know, like, summer is coming, you know, like business flights is back to normal. Another part of the world is seeing a lockdown. So, that kind of creates a kind of disparity between, sentiments and also how things are moving on. If you can actually look at, also another part, which is you mentioned just now, the equity space, it's been going much higher and it has been driven by strong sentiments that things could be, behind us now. And, the world moving forward is getting a bit, better. But again, stocks and equities are basically sentiment driven. And that's why the Fed had come out to say that, oh, you know, like, we feel that inflation is hitting big numbers. We really need to put a curb on it. And hence they come out with 6 or 7 planned rate hikes to bring this down. So it is a different time, or like everything is moving maybe in the correct direction, but just at a lagging or moving ahead kind of a timeline. So if we put it ourselves forward, maybe a couple of months downward, when the Fed has successfully put in a few percentage points, or not a few percentage points, rather a couple of 1% or so into hiking rates. I mean, this will definitely make it a bit more difficult to continue owning properties or even to take out a loan to buy more stuff. But this again will come into a challenge on whether the move is enough as the world gradually comes out of a lockdown, or that there will be even new kind of like opening up of like a travel, air travel, who knows, maybe even space travel, right? So there's going to be a lot more trades taking place. So we're assuming that if the hike of the interest rate eventually does curb asset prices, these things will start to come down. And I think it's also healthy for equity markets to somehow correct a bit before it continuously go up, that is supported by a total or real world kind of a growth where businesses are really doing well and not just based on the sentiment growth. So what I'm saying is that couple of months or years down, or rather year forward, we should be seeing equity going up after the curb, and it's supported by also real business growth on the ground, GDP growing, and so on, not just maybe in certain country, but around the world. So my point being is that the kind of like differences that you're seeing is due to a delay effect of how certain actions by government or by market itself that is not yet shown in tandem.
So, okay. So things are moving in ripples. That makes sense. Another question was, you know, here in the US, a lot of people don't know that the dollar is not backed by gold anymore, and it hasn't been since the Nixon administration in the 70s. Why is the US dollar still so trusted worldwide despite that?
Well, first of all, US is a big country, and I think over everyone has a lot of confidence in the governance of it. There is also built over time a trust in the financial system, where US treasuries are being owned by countries around the world as kind of like a AAA asset. Well, this means that the world believes that US will never collapse, and they will always be on time to be able to return the coupons, or, you know, the amount invested in the treasuries. So that is kind of like the basis of the overall financial system, right? I mean, every country out there also release their own treasuries and debts. Every other country will buy you as part of their holding. Or you can see it as every country believing in the financial system and believing in kind of like the stability of the country in which they own the debt to. So US, definitely, it's the debts are directly kind of traded in US dollar. US dollar is also treated worldwide as a currency that is the most liquid, and it's well, maybe this will change in the future, I'm not sure, but as of this moment, it's definitely the number one trusted liquidity forex that is being used to purchase almost everything and anything you can see out there, be it in the real world or be it in the financial system or even in the world of crypto, right? It's always being linked back to the USD. Well, we can look at it as the fact that even in crypto, there's more currency that you can actually use to purchase crypto. But ultimately, the baseline of things we all know as well is still USD. Yeah, so that definitely is based on the confidence and the traditional setup of how financial systems and how debts and treasuries are actually set up.
That makes sense. I mean, belief is a very, very powerful thing. And also, you just thinking of the US dollar as a unit of account, like you mentioned, it's going to take a tremendous amount to disrupt something like that. To redenominate everything in the world into something else would be a tremendous undertaking and would really have to occur when there's really just no other choice. How can DeFi potentially disrupt the global debt market? Have you seen anything out there that's really built to aid and assist in something like that?
In terms of the debt market, I'm trying to just think of the protocols that actually has interest rate products itself to offer. I wouldn't say that's too proliferated as of now, but I always imagine that, for example, like treasuries and debts, sometimes they are, or even maybe not, let's not talk about US, maybe some other bonds that's released by countries. They can only be purchased by accredited investors of a certain unit and size. So if you are not of a certain stature or wealth level, you might not be able to have access to it, which is ironic because these are probably the safest asset or coupon clippers that anyone can get.
So is it just because it's not worth it to do all the paperwork and stuff for small dollar amounts? Or is it really just a level of sophistication and risk that they want to restrict this?
Well, it's a bit of both. First of all, for a lot of these bonds or even access to treasuries, I mean, US is quite efficient. I mean, comparing to other countries, there could be minimal amount that you have to have before you can purchase a part of a bond or a unit of a bond, right? So there are definitely companies out there who's doing their part to splice this up, but at the same time, they will be taking a cut for doing that, for basically, you know, taking a chunk and then splitting it up. In the world of DeFi, right, where I see as a bright spark and also something that I think it's fair, is that with this technology, you can definitely have a DeFi bond or equivalent launch to raise funds. And basically, it is as small because everything is on smart contract and automated. You can have clip size as small as $20 or $50. And that you allow people ease of access. Anyone can just go in and purchase it. And there it is in your wallet. I think first of all, it's more encompassing and allow really the everyone to be able to have access to good products products that give them good returns and save. Well, if you compare it to the traditional way of looking at things, if you are not maybe AI, you might not be able to buy a bond. I mean, again, I share this like candidly. Obviously, there are a lot of institutions trying to make this work for everyone. And they choose some good quality products that allows individuals like you and I to be able to gain access to it. But again, this may not be encompassing, and people who may really want it may not be able to have access to it somehow.
I guess that makes sense. Well, I really appreciate all the thoughts you've shared on the global situation. Well, we haven't even talked about your platform, Tranches. So explain to us what you've built over here. You know, it's called the Yield Enhancing Asset Tracker, and you've got some variable risk solutions, and you've got a bunch of different buckets that are all themed after different chess pieces. What's the thought process behind this platform, and what's it trying to deliver to the end user?
Well, first of all, to mention, Tranches is actually an asset tracking and management protocol that provides a varied risk reward for users that have different risk appetites and capacity. So maybe if you're new to DeFi, you may want to go into dollars. You can basically enter into the token Bishop. That's basically stablecoin-like and get PLU. Or you can be, you know, like owning BTC, and you can be going into the likes of Queen, which is a one-time tracker of underlying. And you can also get attractive rewards based on a normal hodler of crypto. Or you can be aggressive type and you take on Rook, which is a leveraged token that tracks underlying like ETC, ETH, BTC, or BNB. In essence, they are basically something, a product that's meant for every user out there of different risk capacities and appetite. So we come in simply enough with a vision, right, that we want to empower DeFi users with asset management capabilities while contributing to the paradigm shift, obviously, from TradFi to DeFi. And now actually what we are trying to do, right, is we are gradually increasing our product suite to make it a very comprehensive, extended product suite that will be able to give sustainable or derive sustainable long-term returns for users across the different risk appetites. And we are doing that through diversification across crypto assets, going multi-chain, and having increased types of revenue streams. So that's basically, in essence, us. We have a team of guys that are from TradFi, so quants, trading asset managers, and so on. So we believe that we are building something to cater to both the DeFi world and the TradFi world. And we can already see that since the last 2 years, things have been converging pretty nicely. We think that in the long run, Tranches itself, having products that caters to both the TradFi and DeFi, will be a leading protocol that shows, I wouldn't say show the way, but you know, like kind of like be part of the future into the convergence and allowing people from both sides to benefit. Yeah, definitely we are aiming also to become a single access point, right? To gain access to multiple crypto products, DeFi, and who knows, maybe one day we could be the single access point for TradFi as well.
I think you have a really beautiful platform here, and you get, you know, three easy choices to earn Bitcoin, Ethereum, or BNB with three simple strategies, whether it's USDC based, really low, relatively safe leverage, or you know, some yield farming. And it's pretty simple. I mean, there's a lot of people that will never have any opportunity to trade on leverage or are blocked out from exchanges that have, you know, long tokens. But for example, here the B Rook lets you do, you know, 2x long Bitcoin leverage just by holding that token in your wallet. And I think that's an amazing achievement that's really, really cool. So thank you for doing that. And I love how you've got, you know, the transparent APR ranges of, you know, what's possible. You know, there's no gimmicks or frills or guarantees on here. It's just straight numbers and stats. And if it makes sense to you, you can use it. And if not, that's okay. And you got all kinds of other stuff going on over here as well. So pretty cool.
Yeah, we try to make it like a easy GUI, and for people to directly see it instinctively, they understand and know what it's offering. I guess on top of what we are doing, right, I didn't mention, but whereas we are very happy innovating products and trying to continuously deliver sustainable strategies for the long term, we are also prioritizing security. That is number one priority for us since day one. I mean, when we started, to be honest, coming from the world of TradFi, we were very worried because we have seen rug pulls, we have seen hacks, and all the things happening on DeFi, right? So definitely that starting point was kind of like a fingers biting scary for us. But
yeah,
we spent a lot of time looking through quotes, getting audits done. I think it's also part of our TradFi background that, you know, like, makes us look at things like this. We want to ensure that, number one, we don't have compromises on the security. Yeah, our tech guys are also from familiar names like Microsoft, Google, Facebook, and stuff. So these guys definitely know what they are doing.
That's great. And why did you choose to build on Binance Smart Chain? Of all layer ones, there's nothing wrong with it, of course, but what was it about that that attracted you and said, this is what I'm going to do?
Very honestly, we were thinking about Ethereum, but at that point of time, we were also looking at the gas fees. We just didn't feel that at that juncture, the amount of gas fees that would be paid is going to be offering good value to the users. The truth is, part of our investment, seed investor included Binance Labs and so on. So we kind of like looked at it and we think that it has a relatively good support for protocols, and hence, obviously very, very, cheap gas fees at that point of time. So that kind of like, propel us to move ahead with that as a starting point.
That makes a lot of sense. There's kind of a bias against Binance Smart Chain tokens and things that are listed on PancakeSwap just due to the nature of rug pulls that have happened and how easy it is to use that platform. So it's really a testament to how good of a platform it is. But I'm looking here at, you know, your Tranches platform and your Chess token. It's one of the most legitimate things I've ever seen built on the Binance Smart Chain. So, you know, much respect to you guys for that. And what do you think it's going to take to more legitimize that ecosystem? I mean, in a decentralized world, you can't really pick favorites or non-favorites. But what can Binance Smart Chain do to incentivize more good projects to use it?
Well, first of all, BSC is already renaming themselves as BNB Chain. Part of the process, they also realized that they want to be ahead of time. First of all, to ensure gas fee remains low. There are also plans to prevent, you know, the blockchain from bloating, from delays, from all the possible kind of stumble stone that other blockchains have encountered, right? Blocks not being produced and so on. So I think they have been very ahead of time, pragmatic in trying to keep up with times and providing best value for protocols online. Being on Binance, the BNB chain, I to be honest, I'm quite grateful because they have put us up as MVB, Most Valuable Builder, as well as putting us on the Hall of Fame in recognition of what we have done so far. So there is a very good kind of recognition or how you say a community feedback on what's good and what's not, which they take into account seriously. There are also lots of incentives being provided for good projects out there to have access, liquidity to do something to improve, be it for community space, be it for also like improving protocol. In fact, now there's an ongoing hackathon that is helping that with helping protocol in mind on making certain processes smoother for them. So that really is I would say that there are definitely other blockchains out there that's doing similar, but by looking at them as an individual blockchain, I think they are doing quite good in the sense of like ensuring things move forward in a safe and a continuous manner. We were also given this program, put on this program for priority one. I think it came about because a lot of the protocol voice out that, okay, you know, guys, what if we get hacked? What are you guys trying to help to do about it? So basically, if you have bug bounty with Immunify, they will actually offer you maybe a 2x, 1.5 or 2x on top. If anything happens as a, you know, like strengthening kind of like white hackers to really look at your codes, even more properly so that they can, get back a bigger bounty, right? So that's really quite a lot of, stuff. I, to be honest, I was surprised myself, to see this continuous, like, kind of a give back from the blockchain. Yeah. We will definitely be moving on to other chains, with, Ethereum, with our immediate goal set. But we are also kind of like cautiously and looking at the landscape of layer twos as we speak.
Makes a lot of sense. And just one further note I wanted to add. Binance Labs is actually has one of the best reputations for projects they invest in. I mean, they're first class. You know, you look now, you know, they've got, you know, 5 or 6 projects in the top 200, including things like the Sandbox, Algorand, Harmony, Kava, and many, many more. So you're in really, really good company just to be listed in that whole Binance Labs incubator. So congratulations to that. As a most valuable builder, that's another amazing achievement amongst all those other great projects that came from there. So it's really tremendous. And I love what you're building over there. So we definitely are going to keep an eye on it. And I'm sure as things go even more multi-chain, there's going to be even bigger and better opportunities.
Thanks very much. You know, like, I really hope that we can continue building out new innovations and sustainability, you know, for the overall ecosystem. We have actually sometimes been flagged a bit by our community and say that, you know, like, you guys are working at a snail pace. I feel that we aren't, but if anyone feels that way, we also want to just say that, you know, like, we do spend a lot of time on the security, as we rather have things done slowly than, you know, like, for things to be done fast and, you know, like, everyone gets caught in a bad situation.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, behind the scenes, it might take 1 week to actually get things done on the coding side where it looks like it's working. But then you want to spend another 3 months to 6 months actually bug testing and penetration testing and doing all that stuff to make sure it actually is secure. So and that's the right way to do it. Yeah. So that's great. Before I let you go, just a couple more questions. You know, who's one person that really inspires you to do what you do in this space? Give someone a quick shout out.
Well, you know, like, I was really thinking about this, but kind of like, I wouldn't attune it to anyone. I mean, I could say that, you know, like, Satoshi Nakamoto, but, you know, like, this guy was obviously some, you know, like, we are still trying to find out whether it's a figment of imagination or it's a really real person out there. But to have a vision to come out with Bitcoin and for it to flourish and become what it is today across the whole crypto market, I think we really need more of such characters who's a visionary and able to move things ahead quickly. Now, obviously, I'm not going to just mention one person. In fact, I met with a lot of protocol CEOs who are trying their best, working around the clock to be producing a finer kind of a protocol and delivery to the community. I think these guys are definitely what I would see as probable a next level of visionaries that will help take DeFi into the next step, where it's going to be widely accepted by not just the world of crypto natives, but also to TradFi that's incoming as we speak.
I love that. I mean, a big shout out to all the founders out there that are working 24/7 schedules, taking calls at 3 a.m., 3 p.m., working across, you know, 18 different time zones just to move things forward. I've never met a harder working group of people in any industry that I've ever seen as crypto founders. It's just really unparalleled, just the drive that so many of you guys have.
Yeah, check out the IBEX.
Yeah, exactly. The iBags tell the story right there. iBags, crypto bags, both are getting pretty heavy around this time. And lastly, the final question before we let you go. If you could just give us one more word of wisdom, just in case this is the first podcast that someone's listening to, how should they get started?
I guess I mentioned this earlier on the call as well. You know, start out by doing your own research, for sure. There's a lot of people who jump into the bandwagon listening to friends and basically just applying for MetaMask or even applying for a lock-in to a CX and basically just buy whatever the friends are saying. Please just slow down and, you know, like look through about what you are actually doing. Don't go greedy and invest in size. Do it in small baby steps. Especially if you're coming into DeFi, be very careful. There are so many cases of people losing their seed phrase. There are so many cases of people buying the wrong stuff over the wrong chain and they never see their money again. So more haste, less speed. Do your own research. Please also definitely watch YouTube videos like Crypto 101 and then other interesting protocol out there that basically teaches you the basics, get you up to speed on understanding before you take your first action steps.
That's great advice. Get an education, don't follow the hype, and for the love of God, don't listen to your friends.
Yeah,
all right, Danny.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. You're a friend that is definitely worth listening to. So where can we check you out for more of your thoughts? Do you have a Twitter or anything that we can follow you?
Oh, yes. So my Twitter will be DCKingT. So DCKingT.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. All right, everyone. That's it for today. And we'll be back next week with another great guest here on the Crypto 101 podcast.